This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association member, FDIC. Tennessee just sounds perfect, whether that's live music, the crack of a campfire, or kids laughing on an adventure.
To start planning your trip, visit tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
Can I rant for a sec?
Please.
Pay apps are way too public.
What happened?
Some rando hearted a payment from 5 months ago, and I realized people can see my entire history, who I'm paying, like full names. It's super weird.
Yeah, it's weird. How are you paying your friends then?
Apple Cash. It's all in messages. You can literally send cash like a text, and it stays between friends. Random people can't see it.
Did you just pay me a dollar on Apple Cash?
Shh.
Services are provided by Green Dot Bank. Member FDIC. Terms apply.
Hey, this is Annie.
And Samantha.
And welcome to Stuff I Never Told You, a production of iHeartRadio.
And yeah, we're just expanding our series on Christianity and the marginalized community. And I'm expanding it a lot. What became, it's going to be two or three episodes, as I think almost extended to seven or eight. We'll see.
Mm-hmm.
It's no surprise that there is a limitless amount of controversy and information when it comes to Christianity, especially westernized Christianity, especially during this time, as we are seeing more and more movements like the Christian nationalism. And I really wish we could come with good things, but because I am who I am, everything is sad, everything is the worst, and this one is no different. And as you know, when it comes to religious trauma and Christianity, there is a lot of baggage. And today's topic is very, very heavy. I'm going to go ahead and give you this content warning. We are going to tell explicit stories of sexual abuse within the churches, specifically in the Southern Baptist community. Surprisingly, did not jump into any of the Catholic issues or even the issues that have happened in some of the other religions or communities, I guess, because as of the last couple of years, there's been some really big fallout when it comes to women being harassed, abused, all of the things within the Southern Baptist community and Baptist community in general. So it's a lot. And with that, it's also very personal for me, I will say, as a survivor, I guess, of some things that have been triggered pretty heavily by this episode. So I'm sorry in advance. If you can't handle it, I get it. It was a lot to work through. It's a lot to work through. Again, do what you need to do to keep your own safety, to be in a good place. And if this is something that you can't handle, we get it. Skip past it. But for those of you who might not know what we're talking about, who might not know what happens within communities like this, it's really important that we do have this conversation. And the reason we are naming names is telling stories. A lot of the people who came forward, it took a lot of courage for them to come forward. And we think we owe them that to share as they have shared as well. So that's the top. Here we go. Previously, we talked about purity culture and modesty and how it coincides with rape culture. And something that has become a scandal and controversy for churches across the world are the many accusations of sexual abuse and the mishandling of allegations of sexual abuse and rape. And as the industries all over the world had to face the Me Too era, so did the church. And that's capital C church. In 2017, the hashtag Church2 spread on Twitter as different users told their stories of abuse within the church.
As journalist Eliza Griswold wrote in The New Yorker for her article titled, "Silence is Not Spiritual, the Evangelical hashtag MeToo movement. Quote, when the hashtag ChurchToo movement started last November, with abuse survivors telling stories of being silenced by church leaders, many said that they had been told to submit. The creators of ChurchToo, Hannah Pashett and Emily Joy, have talked about their experiences and continue to help people work through their own stories. Pashett and Joy bonded through shared experiences of trauma from their church, not only through the abuse that they suffered, but also through the trauma of purity culture from their church. In Huffington Post, Posh wrote, Emily and I would create a joint blogging endeavor called the Purity Culture Rehab Project, in which we documented our own baby steps out of the physical and emotional abuse of purity culture. That theology of abstinence that singles out women and slut shames everyone who engages in any kind of sexual activity outside of marriage. Purity culture is the religious antecedent to rape culture, as it lays the bulk of the responsibility for maintaining the sexual purity of both genders on women's attire and behavior. And she went on explaining, over a bottle of cheap gas station wine, we planned out the things we would dare ourselves to do. Our first kisses, asking someone on a date, standing up to a catcaller instead of walking faster and pretending not to hear. As the project took off, the churches we participated in continued to shame us for our appearances, our presumed sexual activity, and our inability to conform to the scriptural ideal of the woman with a gentle and quiet spirit.
I think I've told you that story before about the fact that because I was not the gentle and quiet spirit, I always felt so outside and felt unworthy to be loved. And when I say loved, being in a relationship or being liked by the men in that culture, because I could not be the beautiful, small, petite, quiet woman. Mm-hmm. And this one hit the nail on the head. And I was like, yeah, that was exactly like this. These words do not match me. So I cannot be a part of this. Mm-hmm. Of course, this was not something that was welcomed with open arms. In fact, Posh spoke of feeling like an outsider in her time at the church in college. And as she and Joy bonded over their shared experience with the church, they continued in their own healing journey. And soon after allegations came out through the Me Too movement, Posh and Joy wanted to share their own experiences through the hashtag ChurchToo. Posh wrote in that same article, recently, as allegations after allegations surfaced against men in Washington and Hollywood, Emily and I realized it was time to create space for survivors within the evangelical church and for those who left its walls. So we launched hashtag ChurchToo, a Twitter hashtag that quickly drew out widespread stories of sexual abuse and harassment. It was a reckoning. For me, it was also the culmination of years of speaking out against and unlearning the strictures of evangelical purity culture. And she continues to explain how hashtag MeToo inspired her to tell her story. She writes, the hashtag gave me the courage to come forward with my own story of rape. Although it did not occur specifically within the church, the power of evangelical purity culture were such that when I staggered home, still half muted from the effects of the date rape drug I'd ingested, I was prepared to sweep the whole thing under the rug, blinded by guilt and shame. Surely I had brought this on myself. Surely it was my fault.
And she goes on, after I offered up the hashtag on November 20th, I went to sleep expecting to see a few stories shared by internet friends and mutual in my Twitter mentions the following day. I awoke to dozens of notifications from people I didn't know or follow. By the end of those first 24 hours, the hashtag had exploded. Within 48 hours, people all over the world were sharing their stories of pain and abuse in the church. And every day, without fail, some white male pastor has attempted to discredit the movement and the survivors who had found their voice within it. And many started to share their stories. Here's some examples Vox wrote about. A woman who revealed her rape during a youth group prayer section only to be asked if she'd repented. Another who fled an abusive marriage only to be told by her pastor to return home and submit to her husband's will. Another who, as a child, was told to cover up after a male classmate had been caught masturbating while looking at her. Another who felt compelled to get an abortion lest her church community find out she'd been, in their eyes, impure. This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands. not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly boring since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association member, FDIC. Tennessee just sounds perfect. Whether that's live music, the crack of a campfire, or kids laughing on an adventure.
To start planning your trip, visit tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
Can I rant for a sec?
Please.
Pay apps are way too public.
What happened?
Some rando hearted a payment from 5 months ago, and I realized people can see my entire history, who I'm paying, like full names. It's super weird.
Yeah, it's weird. How are you paying your friends then?
Apple Cash. It's all in messages. You can literally send cash like a text, and it stays between friends. Random people can't see it.
Did you just pay me a dollar on Apple Cash?
Shh.
Services are provided by Green Dot Bank. Member FDIC. Terms apply.
And the movement has continued since, with many more stories coming out. And almost all the denominations have been accused of such abuses, including the Southern Baptist Convention, the largest Protestant denomination in the U.S., which has around 13.7 million members as of 2022. Here's an interesting fact, though. The numbers of the SBC members have steadily declined. And by 2022, over 1 million previous members left the church from the year before. And with movements like #Church2, many of those still as members are asking questions within the churches. In the past years, people have been speaking out about the abuse and harassment within the church, specifically Southern Baptist. But it isn't surprising to learn that many of the leaders of that church have tried to hide and suppress the issues. In a report in the Washington Post, writer Joshua Peace writes about the churches and the allegations. He says, quote, "Likely in any community of faith, there's also sin, often silenced, ignored, and denied. And it is more common than many want to believe. It has often led to failures by evangelicals to report sexual abuse, respond appropriately to victims, or changing the institutional cultures that enable the abuse in the first place."
And the article continues, "Without a centralized theological body, evangelical policies and cultures vary radically. And while some church leaders have worked to prevent abuse and harassment, many have not. The causes are manifold. Authoritarian leadership, twisted theology, institutional protection, obliviousness about the problem, and, perhaps most shocking, a diminishment of the trauma sexual abuse creates, especially surprising in a church culture that believes strongly in the sanctity of sex. Sexual abuse is the most underreported thing, both in and outside the church, that exists," says Boz Chavijian, a grandson of Billy Graham and a former Florida assistant state attorney. As a prosecutor, Chavijian saw dozens of sexual abuse victims harmed by a church's response to them. In one case, a pastor did not report a sexual offender in his church because the man had repented. The offender was arrested only after he had abused 5 more children.
Yeah. If you don't know who Billy Graham is, then I know that you don't know about the Southern Baptist culture, because Andy did not know. I was like, really?
No.
You don't know who Billy Graham is? I could be wrong.
No.
People can correct me. One of the big first televangelists, as we call them. But yeah, he was a grandson. So for him to be a part of this is pretty surprising.
Uh-huh.
So the article goes on to talk about how many have tried to get information in order to solve this problem. But no surprise, data is not easy to collect. As many have noted, the lack of reporting or even acknowledging the problem has made it difficult to get accurate, if any, real data. And here's another quote written in that article. "The problem in collecting data stems in part from the loose or non-existent hierarchy in evangelicalism. Catholic church abusers benefited from an institutional cover-up, but that same bureaucracy enabled the reporters to document a systemic scandal. In contrast, most evangelical groups prize the autonomy of local congregations, with major institutions like the Southern Baptist Convention having no authority to enforce a standard operating procedure among member churches. This means researchers attempting to study this issue has to comb through publicly available documents." And the article continues with some research that was found. Quote, "That's what Wade Mullen, the director of the Master's Divinity Program of Capital Seminary and Graduate School, did as a part of his PhD dissertation. He collected reports of evangelical pastors or ministers charged with the crime in order to understand how evangelical organizations respond to crisis. Over 2016 and 2017, Mullen found 192 instances of a leader from an influential church or evangelical institution being publicly charged with sexual crimes involving a minor, including rape, molestation, battery, and child pornography. By the way, this data did not include sexual crimes against an adult or crimes committed by someone other than a leader.
And in another study that was used in the article specifically with one of the evangelical colleges in the U.S., they write, the study showed that 56% of the 381 respondents who reported having knowledge of the school's handling of abuse, a group that included current and former students as well as employees, believed that Bob Jones University, or BJU, conveyed a, quote, blaming and disparaging attitude toward victims. Of the 166 people who said they had been victims of sexual abuse before or during their time at BJU, half said school officials had actively discouraged them from going to the police. According to one anonymous respondent, after he finally told the police about years of sexual abuse by his grandfather, a BJU official admonished him that, quote, you tore your family apart and that's your fault, and, quote, you love yourself more than you love God. And this type of reaction towards victims is not uncommon through the church leaderships, but the movement has made a difference within the past few years. In 2019, an investigation was conducted after a victim, Krista Brown, was able to get the public's attention to the abuses happening within the Baptist church.
Right. And just for a little backstory on Brown, Brown was a victim of rape and molestation as a teenager by the hands of the pastor who led her church. After years of abuse, she finally told her music minister after breaking down and said that she was actually having an affair with a much older pastor. Reminder, she was a minor being coerced by a leader of her church.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of any punishment or any charges, the pastor was transferred to another church with better pay and more responsibility over the children's programs. And Brown would remain silent and suffer through her trauma until her adulthood. And though her abuse occurred years earlier, she finally made a report of her abuse to her childhood church and to the officials of the Texas Southern Baptist leadership. And with a letter, they responded to her accusations. According to a Vice article written about Krista Brown, they stated the church, quote, noted that one person's memories might be materially different from another's and that Brown may have suffered for reasons, quote, not attributed to Mr. Gilmore or the church. And it threatened to seek recourse if she pursued the matter. And actually, she apparently has the full letter on her site. Her site is outdated, so you may not be able to find everything. At this time, Brown had become a lawyer herself and began to negotiate with a church outside of the courts. And this is when she discovered not only did her abuser still work with children within a church, but that the Baptist General Convention of Texas had a list of offenders who had, quote, confessed, been convicted of sexual abuse, or about whom there was substantial evidence that the abuse took place.
It was in 2006 that Brown published an op-ed imploring the BGCT to make the list public. And in the article, they say her logic was plain. Sexual abuse by a trusted religious leader has a soul-murdering impact. The way forward was shining a light on the church's darkness. And even though her request wasn't answered, she started her own website known as the, quote, Stop Baptist Predators website, where she kept her own database of abusers who were named in the public records and media reports. Brown faced a lot of backlash from the SBC. From that same article, they write, in 2006, D. August Augie Boto wrote to Brown in his capacity as then vice president of convention policy, saying that, quote, continued discourse between us will not be productive or fruitful. The following year, while Brown was advocating for an independent review board to SBC's bylaws work group, she recounted what it was like to discover that the man she said had molested and raped her as a teen was still working as a Southern Baptist children's minister. One executive committee member turned his back while she spoke, and another one chortled. She was the only woman in the room.
Of course, for those of us who have been involved in church systems like this, this type of reaction is not surprising. I think I've had many who would just acted surprised or kept quiet. When I had my own instances and more of my own experience, I was told that I read into it, that it didn't happen. I must have imagined it.
Mm-hmm.
That happens a lot. Of course, with her tireless efforts, many more people came out and told their stories. Different women all over the country sent their stories to Brown, emailed them, and let her know what's going on.
After the hashtag MeToo and hashtag ChurchTube movement started, with the help of Brown's own work, so many people did come forward, breaking down the barriers that have been keeping women trapped in their trauma and experiences. Women like Jules Woodson and a victim of Pastor John Lowe. Woodson was finally able to tell her story. Here's what Slate wrote about her experience. Quote, Jules Woodson moved to the Woodlands in Texas when she was five and joined a local Baptist church, Woodlands Parkway. It was part of the Southern Baptist Convention, the largest Protestant denomination in the U.S. and one of the most conservative. When Woodson was a teenager, she was allegedly sexually propositioned by a youth pastor named Andy Savage. Word started getting around the church. Savage admitted he made what he called a mistake and resigned, though he eventually found work at another Southern Baptist church and then a mega church. Woodson finally went public with her story in 2018, and at his mega church, Andy Savage apologized to the congregation for what he called a sexual incident.
And the victim of Pastor John Lowe had to publicly confront Lowe after he downplayed his offenses in front of the congregation. Here's a bit from an NBC News post written by reporter Jessica Johnson. Shortly after Pastor John Lowe II pleaded for his congregations to seek the saving knowledge of Christ, he said he had a confession. He wanted to follow a biblical process of confessing, repentance, and forgiveness, which would lead up to him finally admitting that he had committed adultery. He stressed that it was 20 years ago and was with one person, and as a way to hammer home that he was doing the upstanding thing, he said he would not use the Bible to defend, protect, and deflect my past sins. He continued, quote, I have no defense. I committed the adultery. To say it plainly, I didn't make a mistake. I need to say that, and you deserve to hear it. He asked the congregation for forgiveness and announced that he was stepping aside from ministry responsibilities and submitting to recommendations from the church board. As Lowe placed the microphone down and stepped off stage, he received a standing ovation. But he had left out key details, and as the applause continued, a woman and her husband stepped up to the pulpit to fill in what these details were. The clapping died down as the woman began. I lived in a prison of lies and shame, lying to protect the Lowe family, having suicidal thoughts, not realizing what had been truly done to me. I would still be in a prison if my brother had not approached me just 2 weeks ago with what he had seen as a teenager that bothered him all these years. His pastor in bed with his younger sister, a t-shirt and underwear on. People knew but were too afraid to come forward, and they have now. The lies and manipulation have to stop. She then addressed Lowe directly. She was standing nearby at the front pew. She said, I was a prisoner and you kept me in your prison. I am a prisoner no longer. I was just 16 when you took my virginity on your office floor, she said. You did things to my teenage body that had never and should have never been done. You are not the victim. And indeed, he is not, though he tried to make himself look as if he was. After the woman left the stage with her husband, a man shouted, quote, if you did it, you have to admit it. Lowe responded, she was 16. It was wrong. That's just the way it is. All I can do is ask you to forgive me. I'm doing the biblical process. I'm stepping down.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association, member FDIC. Tennessee just sounds perfect, whether that's live music, the crack of a campfire, or kids laughing on an adventure.
To start planning your trip, visit tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Well, with all the stories and accusations coming out, the SBC have had to rethink their policies. Previously, the SBC's tactic was lacking, as one article from Vox writes, quote, when it comes to addressing sexual abuse up until now, they have claimed that because of their church policy, they don't have the authority to track abusers and hold local churches accountable, said Kristen Cobes-Dumas, a professor of history at Calvin University and the author of Jesus and John Wayne, How White Evangelicals Corrupted a Faith and Fractured a Nation, quote, but in the report, we found that they had, in fact, been tracking abusers in their churches and had been maintaining a private database for their own protection. They had not in any way reached out and tried to prosecute those abusers to keep people safe. In the 2019 investigation completed by Houston Chronicle, a lot of information was given to the issue within the churches. Here's another quote from that same Slate article. In 2019, a Houston Chronicle investigation revealed widespread sexual assault within the denomination. One reporter, Robert Downen, uncovered troubling details that prompted the SBC to commission its own internal review conducted by an independent organization called Guidepost Solutions. The review confirmed a lot of what the Chronicle had already found. And earlier this month, the SBC announced it was being investigated by the Department of Justice. Some survivors, like Woodson, hope the investigation might lead to crucial changes, but they're unsure whether justice is possible or if substantive reforms will be implemented.
Right. Guidepost Solutions, the independent firm who investigated within the SBC, yeah, they found a lot. Here's a quote. The probe found that the Southern Baptist Convention's executive committee had mishandled abuse claims and stonewalled survivors. The investigation was requested by the executive committee after it faced growing pressure for an external probe into abuse allegations. This is according to one of the NBC News articles. And according to another one written by NPR, they state, an SBC sex abuse task force released a blistering 288-page report from outside consultants Guidepost Solutions. The firm's seven-month independent investigation found disturbing details about how denominational leaders mishandled sex abuse claims and mistreated victims. The report focused specifically on how the SBC's executive committee responded to abuse cases, revealing that it had secretly maintained a list of clergy and other church workers accused of abuse.
With this report, the SBC soon released a 205 list of names of pastors and other leaders and members of the Baptist churches who had been accused of sexual abuse. And as women and victims have been speaking out, causing a massive shift in accountability, structural changes continue to take place within powerful religious organizations like the Southern Baptist Convention. Unfortunately, due to years of a power imbalance between leaders and members, women and men, marginalized and white supremacy, justice is not swift or easy. As another Vox article writes, quote, complementarianism's centrality within the SBC led to a heavily patriarchal institution, which Meredith Stone, the executive director of Baptist Women in Ministry, said created an environment in which sexual abuse could happen and be covered up as extensively as the Guidepost report said it was. And as such, she said, simple systemic fixes ultimately won't be enough to reform the SBC. Instead, theological changes will have to be made, and they will be the ones the SBC won't want to make. The underlying systemic issues within the Southern Baptist Convention have to do with a theology that said some people are favored by God, some people have more power, and God supports them having that power and exerting it over others, Stone said. That in no way diminishes the culpability of individuals and the decisions that they make to act in an abusive way against another person. But I think when they are in an environment that says, God supports power over saying God is about love and inclusion, it makes those actions more palatable.
Right. This is where we can talk about Christian nationalism because of those excuses right there. And we will. We'll come back to that. It's a lot. This is a lot. And you know what? Today, several lawsuits have been filed against many of those in leadership. However, This happened in March. The case against Paige Patterson, the former president of Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary in Fort Worth, which, by the way, I try to go to, and the school, was dismissed for failing to prevent sexual abuse on campus. Patterson, by the way, also was a former president of the SBC, or the Southern Baptist Convention, who he had been fired after mishandling several sexual abuse and harassment cases at the school. And even with evidence that he had wanted to meet one-on-one with one of the victims to, quote, break her down, as he put in an email, and being fired from this position, the case was still dismissed and it can't be brought back because she did it with prejudice. And with results like that, as well as the years of covering up mishandling of many cases of rape, assault, and abuse, it's hard to have a positive outlook. I got real triggered by this episode, as I said before. But seeing women like Krista Brown, Emily Joy, Jules Woodson, Hannah Pash, and so many more speak up, protesting conferences and supporting one another, changes happen. And it gives us hope to see more as they keep pushing forward. And we're hoping to see what happens with the DOJ investigation, because I don't see any new reports on that, but it has been ongoing. As with the Guidepost Solutions report and the list that was released to the public, perhaps there could be a big shift in responsibility. And I don't think I explained the Southern Baptist Convention very well, but it has been around since the 1800s. They have been in the U.S., and they are evangelical, meaning they do a lot of missionary stuff. I actually did my missionary through the Southern Baptist Convention, which, fun fact, I wasn't a member of, but I didn't know that. Yeah, and they gave me money. Yeah. I'm probably going to be sued for that. But yeah, there's a lot to be said about how powerful this convention is. If you look behind what they are a part of, they are heavily into politics, even though they would claim they are not. And yeah, they are part, not all, please understand, Baptist people, if you're listening, I know there's so many good people who are horrified. And there were reports and individuals who were horrified by this report saying that they didn't know. But again, this might lend to the fact that things like purity culture really, really, really make things too black and white instead of seeing the gray when it comes to sexual assault. And by the way, if they're teenagers and you're an adult, there's no gray to that. And it should be really, really easy. But yet it's not. Which is also why we have a problem with child brides, but many of the states don't. And Republicans don't, who would consider themselves Southern Baptists or Baptist Protestants, which is an interesting conversation in itself. But here's to hoping that movements like #Church2, which is very, very active still on, well, as Twitter is dying, has been active on Twitter. I actually looked it up the other day. Hopefully we'll be able to see more stories, more accountability through it. Again, the release of the list from the Southern Baptist Convention just happened within this past year. So we'll see how it results. We'll see what the DOJ finds and how they will hold leadership and power in those denominations accountable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, there is so much to uncover and unpack and undo, because for most of us, your kids, when you are kind of indoctrinated with all of this stuff. So it is a lot, but we will continue with however many episodes this mini series will be.
And some of them will be shorter like this because it is a gut punch.
Yes, yes. And there will be some breaks. There will be some breaks in between. But in the meantime, listeners, if you have any resources, thoughts about this, you can email us at stuffmediamomstuff@iheartmedia.com. You can find us on Twitter at @MomStuffPodcast or on Instagram and TikTok at @StuffMomNeverToldYou. You can also find us on YouTube. We also have a book. You can pre-order it at stuffyoushouldreadbooks.com. Thanks, as always, to our super producer, Christina, our executive producer, Maya, and our contributor, Joey.
Thank you all.
Yes. And thanks to you for listening. Stuff I Never Told You is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, you can check out the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, wherever you listen to your favorite shows. This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring. like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association member, FDIC. Tennessee just sounds perfect, whether that's live music, the crack of a campfire, or kids laughing on an adventure.
To start planning your trip, visit tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.